Welcome to the Good Vibes Podcast with Clark Impastato and Ryan G.
Hey, Ryan, dude.
What up, buddy?
Not much, man. Hey, I looked at our map of the Vibe Tribe. Do we got China and Russia back? Oddly enough,
you know what? Listen, here's a PSA, and we're going to talk about Ukraine next week, things like this. But here's a PSA to our Russian brothers and sisters: we're proud that you're taking to the street. Okay, this is craziness. We're supporting our Vibe Tribe in the Ukraine and Russia. The people that think this is crazy. Your leader is crazy. He's out of control.
Yeah, good on you for protesting that stuff, man.
Yeah.
The Vibe Tribe out there doing what's right
in the, absolutely. In the
Russia. Good for you guys, man.
Yeah, and maybe if that's the KGB listening to us, I think it's time for a new leader, guys.
Yeah, do what you do. Maybe
do a
little coup or something. Hey, relieve the captain of a ship. Be like, all right, dude, you got to go. You're fucking up, man. Hey, speaking of which, I found an awesome morale patch that I will unveil during our next episode where we talk about it. I found this thing on eBay. I'm like, oh, dude, I'm going to wear it in honor of the freedom fighters in Ukraine. So it's pretty cool.
Amen.
Yeah.
That will be fun. But in the meantime, because, hey, man, none of us thought this shit would drop within a week. We have a great guest scheduled. We're excited.
Very excited. Can't wait to introduce you guys to him. Most of you probably know who he is, but for those of you that don't, he's got an amazing story, and we'll get into it, man.
I'm excited. He's a hell of a patriot,
a goddamn red-blooded American.
On that note, what do you think? Should we bring him in?
Yeah, bring him in.
Here we go. Let's bring in. Push the button. Oh, and a doorbell.
Do we go? It's coming.
You never know what the buttons on here.
It's got its own format, its own particulars. It even catches us off guard sometimes. So,
oh gosh, I'm just happy that the video and the internet's working with
you know
all the shit we talk
and the update that we had to do on my whole H4M Pro side too. That was horrible.
All right. There's Mr. Hey, Greg,
can you hear us good?
Back.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah, I think it kicked me off for a second, but we're back.
It's China.
China's following us again, and Russia.
Oh, I know.
I love that little map. Do you have that little map where you can kind of see the analytics of what countries are tuning in and stuff? It's pretty cool, man.
Oh, I do not have that.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of cool. We can show you what we use, and it just has a whole feedback of like downloads per episode, countries, and it's neat to see how that worldwide, you're like, holy shit, that many people are listening. It's great, especially from some random countries, man.
That's what I'm saying, man. And that's the power of the internet. Like people are coming together in a way that's never happened throughout history. You know,
we
can sit here and bullshit about whatever we want. And there's some person in Bangladesh that might listen to it and take something away. You know, it's
well, especially crazy. Podcasting, dude, it's pretty unregulated at the moment. And so it's kind of like pirate radio. You know, they got their grips on social media, but podcasting is a good way to get info out. So, yeah. Well, you got a ghost?
I was just going to say.
Dude, look over your shoulder. Holy shit.
Actually, no, check this out real quick. I just told my wife to bring something in here. I don't share this very often, but I think you'll appreciate it. So let me grab it real quick.
Are you telling me your wife just army crawled into the room?
She just like rolled something
That's
in,
awesome.
Dude.
That's awesome.
Check this out. I got this when I was 16 years old.
Oh, holy shit.
It's the Dime Slime model.
Yeah.
And look right here. Signed by Dimebag Darrell himself.
No way. Oh my God, so, dude.
I got this guitar. I ordered it. I worked all summer at a machine shop when I was 16 years old.
Dude.
And then I put the down payment through Washburn because they just started producing these. Remember Washburn took the contract from Dean?
That
was in like 1996.
Yeah.
And so they were doing a promotional thing and they said like the first however many people order these guitars get a chance to come and meet Dime, take a picture with him, and shake his hand.
Dude,
and I got to be one of those people.
No!
Isn't that nuts, man?
And they did. That's our podcast. We don't talk about anything. Yeah, it's amazing.
We're out. We're out.
Dude, you still
I always joke like Pantera was my second set of parents, man. Oh, I've been in Pantera mosh pit since I was like 13, 14 years.
That's my gym music, man. I just throw on their greatest hits. They got a little compilation album, and that every time I lift weights, it's just, and sorry, Metallica, you create a different mood for me, but when you want to get some, Pantera, dude.
Oh yeah.
Far beyond driven for me. I always say if I was stuck on a desert island for the rest of my life and I could choose one album, it would hands down be Far Beyond Driven.
Fuck, that's awesome. What was he like? Did you get to chat with him a little bit? Kind of
Dude, it was kind of weird, man. Like, so I got to meet him there and we just chatted real quick. There was a line of people and he was doing a signing. So it wasn't very personable. And then I won backstage tickets during the Southern Trendkill tour. And a buddy got to go back and pound beers with them.
Yeah.
And I was like 17 at the time, dude.
Holy shit.
Yeah, we got to see the other side of Pandora.
And
hey, grab a Coors Light. We're going to drink this Lone Star State style. And, you know, like pouring it in our mouths. Just like the videos, man. It's like, oh, this is really how these dudes roll every single night. You know?
Dude, oh my God. That's blown my doors off. That's totally unexpected. I forgot everything I was going to ask you. That's amazing.
Dude, I was actually, I was deployed to Ramadi when Dimebag was killed. And I'm not kidding you, man. That was like one of the most fucked up deployments I'd ever been on. But that bothered me in a way that like even losing people, you know, didn't bother me. Because when you're deployed and you're a Ranger, or you're a SEAL, you understand the game you're in.
Yeah.
You understand what you're partaking in.
Yeah.
But to lose a guy like that, who's a musician, who's
especially the way he went was so weird. Yeah, man. Like it wasn't he was found dead in a hotel room from liver failure.
No, that would have made sense, right?
Be like, oh, all right, yeah. Right. That's the accepted risks for that profession. But to get gunned down on stage, dude.
I know, man. Yeah. No, that bothered me for a long time. It just, the universe doesn't make sense sometimes. And that was one of those times, man.
No, could you imagine what he would be like if he was still kicking it with us, man? Just the level he could do. Ugh.
Well, you know,
that guy changed an entire genre of music, you know, I feel like he's a once in a generation metal guitarist.
He is. He's our generation's Jimi Hendrix. Like he just was that dude that marched to his own beat, man. Then there's never been, you know, as good as Zakk Wylde is. He's just not in that. Dime was in his own bubble, dude. I don't know. I can't.
It's funny you say that because I always say Zakk Wylde is the only. Remember when they were talking about a Pantera reunion tour for a while? Mm-hmm. I was like, well, no one could fill Dime's shoes. But if anyone were to attempt it, Zakk Wylde would be the only guy that could like pull it off in a way that's like respectful and honoring.
Dime would want that too. You know what I mean? Because they were bros and, but still it's just that Dime was such an outside the box guy. Like, you know, I don't know. You can't put your finger on it. He's one of those dudes. It's like watching Michael Jordan play basketball. Like they are themselves. Yeah. Like you just can't. You know?
He's in that flow state when he's playing.
Is. Yes. You know? It's just, you see him like the movie, The Last Dragon, right? He gets the glow, you know? Barry Gordy's Last Dragon.
And guitar's a weird thing for me because I played it my whole life and I still don't feel like I'm very good. And that's just, crazy. Some people have a natural knack for it. And I feel like it's been an uphill battle, but a lot of music, like it's timing and it's rhythm, like, or I can read the tab and I could play a lot of like pretty intricate stuff, but Dime was playing from his soul and he hit those crazy pinch harmonic squeals and dive with the whammy bar and stuff like trying to do that. Good luck.
Yeah. And he just did it. Yeah. Like you said, from his heart, like it, I don't even know if he knew what he was doing. You know, it just, people that are that good, it just happened. I mean, we've seen people that can shoot like that. Tactically, they're just those gifted, and no matter how much you practice, you'll be good. Like I always considered myself a B-level dude, and I had to work hard to be a B-level guy.
Yeah,
there's guys that just seem to go with it, and they're these A-level performers at whatever.
Yeah,
and they just—it's
almost like the stars aligned, and what that person was put on planet Earth for, they found their calling. Because I think a lot of people I think a lot of people miss their calling. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just that life circumstances never put them in a position where they get to chase what they're truly designed to do.
Or too scared, or too scared to follow your gut.
Yeah.
We have 100%. Those people too.
Yeah.
It could be, yeah. Because there's a lot of risk and reward for making that decision. Like, well, I could go on this safe path, but what I really want to do is this, whatever that may be.
So
I see the same, or go ahead.
You said something interesting, Greg, because you said the universe doesn't make sense. And I just thought that was such a great line to segue into you in your story, because there's probably people that listen to the podcast who might not know who you are. We have people overseas. So the universe doesn't make sense. And I just think that's so, I just think it's so funny you said that, because your story, that would be the headline of like, what the fuck is going on, right?
Well, Greg, if you could do me a favor, could you kind of start with that video you posted 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And then maybe work our way backwards, because that's how I first discovered you. That video went pretty viral.
Oh, yeah.
And when you and I have similar backgrounds, you know, but what I didn't know is you had a military background at the time. And I thought, damn, for a cop, he's got balls. Then when I discovered what you did in the military, I'm like, oh, all right, it makes sense. But when that video first came out, it was very impactful. In fact, you just reposted it because of current times. And so,
because of the stuff we're seeing in Canada. Exactly, and so I'll take you back a little before the video, just to kind of give listeners kind of a background of who I am. So right out of high school, I went into the military, and I was like a lot of the guys in the special operations community. I was fit and I loved fighting and I was kind of wild and I hated school. And I knew going to college would be a waste of everybody's time, everybody's money. And I did what a lot of young men do, is just go into a recruiter and see what they have to offer. And it's funny, dude, because I have tons of buddies that are team guys now. And I decided just arbitrarily, I want to be a Navy SEAL or an Army Ranger. No reason why. I didn't know anything about them, but those two things sound cool to say, you know? And so I went in and I talked to both the Navy recruiter and the Army recruiter. And the Navy recruiter was just a fucking douchebag. And the Army recruiter seemed like a pretty cool guy. So here I am, 17 years old, basing a major career step on the attitude of two random men that have, neither one of them knew anything about the communities that I was trying to be a part of, you know? But that's, you hear that story a lot, you know?
True.
And the Navy guy was just real pushy too. And I was like, man, I just don't get good fucking vibes from this guy. And so ended up going into the Army and went into the Ranger Regiment. I actually, my last day of Ranger school was 9/11. And so.
Oh, wow. Shit.
Yeah. So it's
talk crazy. About how the universe works, right?
Yeah, I know, right? And here we are, you know, like in Ranger Regiment, you get promoted to E4 as soon as you graduate Ranger school. So I'm this brand new tabbed E4. And the world is falling apart, and we're fucking deployed less than a month later, getting ready to invade Afghanistan and jump on Objective Rhino, you know, at 21 years old. And I can't let that story go and sound cool like I invaded Afghanistan, though, because literally right before the jump, you know how shit goes. They're like, because we were an attachment. It was 3rd Ranger Battalion with an attachment from 2nd Ranger Battalion. We were the attachment. Okay. And they said, hey, we've determined that it's a battalion size mission. We're cutting attachments. So we got to watch 3rd Battalion invade Afghanistan from an airfield while we sat on our fucking asses, dude. That haunts me. That haunts me to this day, man.
That's a tough one.
I did the Ranger thing. I did one enlistment, and then I went into aviation. I wanted to fly because I was like, if I'm going to stay in the military, I should do something that actually builds a career instead of just walking around with a gun and a rucksack. And I ended up getting hurt. I hemorrhaged my retina, and I got dropped from flight school. And then I just went into the contracting world. And dude, the contracting world was probably some of the most formative and like the best experiences of my entire life. Because I was this young 23-year-old Ranger, and I was surrounded by career Navy SEALs, Green Berets, unit guys, Force Recon dudes, just a bunch of studs. And I was like bottom man on the totem pole. And for like for learning and learning about leadership and learning about teamwork. I think the contracting world was probably some of my most formative years. And I mean, you guys remember the contracting world kind of got shit on for a while. And that's because there was, just like anything, there's good people out there and then there's shitheads doing shitty things. Mm-hmm. But from my experience, man, I fucking loved that. And I did that.
I had the same exact feelings, man. For me too, my first contracting gig was in Israel. All my TLs were CAG dudes. They all had like 20, 22, 24 years. You know, I'm like, holy shit. Like I taking notes, pen to paper,
yeah.
Like range days, how they wear their gear. Like, so I relate 100% for me personally, my journey. I felt like I developed and grew a lot more in those contracting years before it got a little shady and watered down. It was good.
And it was cool that I was able to, I just embraced what my role on the team was. Triple Canopy, that's a company that I was working for at the time, which was started by a bunch of CAG dudes. And they ran like a mini selection and it was PT and shooting. And like,
nice.
They did a bunch of protection work where they'd assess you. And I was young and I was fit. And the cool thing about coming from the regiment is very disciplined. Like, it's not like a lot of the special operations community. Like, you address your sergeant by his rank and stuff like that. So going and attending a selection coming from that background, that was very simple to be disciplined and respectful, work hard. We're in shape. We could shoot. And so they liked the young Rangers and they picked a lot of us up at those times.
Nice.
But then once we got on the team, it's like, all right, I understand my position. So I'll be up early. I'll be checking tire pressure. I'll be changing fluids, like all the bits work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then that's what makes the team realize like, oh, this guy wants to be here, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's fun. My team leader was a unit guy and I'm actually flying to California next month for his wedding. Like, we're still very close to this day.
That's awesome.
You know?
That's awesome.
And so I really love that lifestyle. I love that mission. But in 2009, we found out my wife was pregnant and she's like, hey, you know, I've been with you through 14 of these deployments. I can't do a family like this. And I was like, I get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I either do this the rest of my life or I change my ways and I accept the fact that that was a phase of my life. And now I'm going to do the family thing. And so that's what we did. And that was I went into law enforcement in 2011. I had a small break when I got home, went to college for a little bit, dicked around, and then went into law enforcement because a lot of soldiers or like people from the military, that's a very natural progression, right? Mm-hmm. I thought I would find some of that camaraderie, some of that purpose. And to tell you the truth, I don't want to shit on the career of law enforcement because I know there's a ton of good people and I know it's a hard job, but I never felt that personally. I never fell in love with that profession. It was more about a paycheck and just how I support my family. And it just became, I was just another guy in the grind, you know? And so I ended up doing that for almost 10 years. I was with two different agencies. I tried a couple different things and I just never really fell in love with it. But at the same time, a lot of people don't love what they do. This is how you feed your family. Sure. And I was okay with that. I was content, I guess you would say, you know? Mm-hmm. And then after this coronavirus stuff started,
shit got weird. Popping, yeah.
It got weird.
Yeah.
It got weird fast. I mean, I made my video May 5th of 2020 and that was a couple months into it, right?
It is true. Yeah.
And this so was
what kind of stuff what were you seeing as far as, I mean, I know the gist of it, but like what?
Yeah. So from a police officer's perspective, every time we would turn the news on in the lunchroom or every time I'd check any of my social media feeds, you would see police officers arresting people at parks. Remember that guy got arrested for going surfing?
Isn't that crazy video? You know? He's all by himself.
And there's two police boats chasing this guy. And then I saw a mother get arrested at a park for playing catch with her son. And every time I saw this, I was like, man, we fucking went to war for freedom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I lost a decade of my life on deploying because we're supposed to be giving these people on the other side of the planet a democracy. And I'm watching our own government behave in a way that I don't think is congruent with our constitution.
Were you having these conversations with your squad mates? Were there other officers that felt the same way?
Bro, in the lunchroom, when the doors were closed, 100% of police officers were appalled and agreed with every single thing I said, even up my chain of command, even my chief, even my commander, everybody, we were all on the same page. But for some reason, people are afraid to talk about it. And I mean, I live in Seattle, so it's an ultra liberal area. The mayor is as far left as you can get. The governor is as far left as you can get. And people in the, it's just like the military. Once you reach a certain rank, you're now playing in that political arena. But I looked at it like this. I don't give a fuck what the political arena says. This is my job. I swore an oath. And as a police officer, I don't serve the political elite. I serve my community. Amen. And if anybody thinks that that's a inappropriate or crazy concept, fuck you, you know? And well, so go ahead.
Just a question. I mean, most law, no, not most, all law enforcement take an oath of some sort. But the premise of basically all these oaths are really to protect and serve. Where do you, did you witness, or where do you think the disconnect occurred with protecting and serving, like you're talking about, the community, and just blindly following bullshit orders, like arresting the guy for surfing because he coughed on a dolphin?
Yeah, I honestly think...
Damn him.
And hey, if you're in the professional law enforcement, like, I'm not trying to cast shade on you, but you might need to look in the mirror, because I feel like the profession is full of good people. I feel like it's full of people that have a good heart and are there for the right reasons. I was in that profession for a decade, and I can tell you, I didn't see a lot of bullies. I didn't see any racist. I didn't see guys that are like putting on their uniform. Yeah, we get to go fuck people up today. Like, that's not what the profession is. But when they were asked to take a stand with the people against their leadership, I didn't see very much strength in the profession. A lot of people, in men that I look up to, men that I feel are tough men, men that I would take to a gunfight, when you start to put their livelihood on the line and their paycheck, it got weird, and it got weird fast. And to this day, it's troubling to me, man, because I feel like if those people are not willing to stand up against our government when it's necessary, they are the last line. They are the enforcement arm of the government.
Especially at the local level, right?
Yes. Yeah. Every level. I mean, without the police serving and following orders of the government, they don't have, they're a toothless tiger. They don't have any power. 100%. And I used to tell the guys, if we would just say, hey, you know what? No, it's that simple.
What could they do? Safety in numbers.
Yeah. No. Yeah, they can't do anything. And bro, that's why I reshared the video last week, because I saw all of these police in Ottawa, hundreds and hundreds of them. And it's like, there is no way in those men and women's heart of hearts, they feel like what they're doing is the correct and ethical way.
But
to
they're
behave.
Doing it. That's they what blows know. Me away. I don't know how.
And bro, I've lost. I mean, I don't tell myself sad stories or focus on the negative. I try and do the opposite of that, right? But I'm also a realist. And I've lost faith in a lot of Americans over the last 24 months. Because when we were backed into a corner by our corrupt government, a lot of people just bent a knee.
Yeah.
Do you know how many people I know that are like, I don't want to get this vaccine, man? But because in Washington, they were mandating it for everybody. For like any big corporation or any agents, any government agency. And I know people are like, man, I can't lose this job. And so I have to get it, but I really don't want to. And I'm like, where are your fucking balls, dude?
Yeah.
Like, I will starve to death in the woods.
Yeah.
Before I'll let another man tell me what I can do or what I can't do. And the analogy that I've been using with everybody, it's like, because I don't want to make this about the vaccine, right? Because everybody can have their opinion. Sure. You do your research. Absolutely. You come to your
conclusion.
It's about
the freedom of choice, man. Yep. You know? Exactly, if you want to get it, go for it. Good on you. But I think differently. I should have that right. Yeah. Yep.
Exactly, man. You come to your conclusion, and then I'm going to respect that. And you should do the same for me, right?
Exactly.
And if Gavin Newsom told me, hey, Greg, at 9 o'clock in the morning, every single morning, you have to drink 12 ounces of orange juice, or else you're going to get in big fucking trouble. Okay. And bro, I like orange juice.
I know. Right? I would just to spite him, I'd be like, fuck you, even if it's my 100%, favorite drink.
Dude. Yeah. No man gets to fucking tell me what I do, what I put in my body, how I treat myself. Like, you don't get to do those things. Nope. And the fact that almost everybody you talk to behind closed doors agrees with this mindset, but no one's willing to push back. I just don't understand.
People are scared, like, to even talk about it, let alone do something about it. They're scared to talk about it.
I think it's more concerning, though. It's like we constantly fail to learn from history. I mean, this is the gas chamber effect, right? And people are like, oh, we would never be like that. Or, you know,
why did they just line up for it? Why didn't they fight back? Well, but we won't even fight back against a mandate, let alone armed dudes telling you to get in some cattle cars.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And the conclusion that I've drawn is that I honestly think there's a percentage of people that are resilient and that are just wired defiant, but most people just aren't, man.
Yeah.
And history is written looking at the people that took a stand, that said, fuck you, that said, not today.
Yeah.
And so we look back on our American history and we see the spirit of defiance with George Washington.
We think everyone was that way, but it was probably a small portion. What? Yeah.
They're probably just the people that the books are written about, because it's just a handful of them that said, you know what? We're not doing this. Yeah.
And I think it was everybody back then, but I bet it wasn't. I bet it was it had 10% of the population, and the rest were all hiding in their houses. You know,
my concern is his dying, right? Because I mean, look at the Ukraine. You had this Russian ship. You had these guys on an island that they said, go fuck yourself. And
yes,
you know, that's what we should have the freedom to say, you know, drink your orange juice or go get a shot or go fuck yourself. You know, I don't have to do this. And we're losing that go fuck yourself spirit.
You know, and I think a big part of it is being deployed a lot as a young man and confronting danger and coming to an understanding of your own mortality. I mean, there was plenty of deployments when I was like, this is probably going to be the one that gets me, you know, like, dude, Ramadi and Fallujah in 2004, like this shit was crazy, but I wasn't. And you guys will know exactly what I'm talking about. I didn't feel fear. I was at peace with where I was at because it was my decisions that brought me there. At the time, I felt like the mission was something that was important to me. And I came to the conclusion that this mission that I'm fucking a part of is probably going to cost me my life at some point. And you tell yourself that because it gives you it puts you at ease almost. It's
some,
like,
acceptance to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It's acceptance. Like, I'm not going to be if you're afraid every day on a deployment, you're combat ineffective. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so.
Well, your brothers will sniff that shit out real quick too and bounce if you can't.
Yeah.
You know. And sometimes it's someone's situation changes, like the birth of a child, and you know their head's no longer in the game. You can see it.
Yeah, 100%, man. Yeah, yeah. And I think people that started to understand, like, draw those conclusions as young men, now we're in our 40s, but we still understand, like, dude, life is finite. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've lost plenty of fucking brothers.
Yeah.
Easy come, easy go. And there's a 0% chance I'm going to fucking become a weaker version of myself and start complying and not have that fucking resilience or that defiance. Like, it's actually getting stronger the older I get.
Well, you have strength in combination with now wisdom, which makes it even more dangerous, because now we're more aware of what we're doing and consequences for bitching out, not doing the right thing. Dire consequences.
Yep. And I look at my buddies that were killed, that were fucking, you know, early 20s, mid 20s. Like, we all lost buddies at those ages. And it's like, dude, I have a family now. I'm fucking in my 40s. Like, dude, if I die tomorrow for this cause, I lived twice the life that a lot of my friends got to live.
We're on borrowed time anyway. Might as well fight.
That's what I'm saying. And so once you come to an understanding of that and you're not living in fear, like, I don't give a fuck what the chief of police tells me. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost laughable. And dude, they pulled me in the office after that video and they're like, or no, they called me.
They were supportive at first, though, initially, weren't they? Your chain of command?
Yeah. And
they started trickling down backwards.
They're like, Greg, that, man, what a powerful message. This department has your back. that's a, that was incredible. And we think that was a good thing to put out to the community and blah, blah, blah. And then a couple hours later, same men are like, and I could tell, right?
Yep,
I'm like,
yep, what's here it comes.
Here we go.
Yep, here we go.
Like, we've been directed to tell you.
Directed. That, there you go.
Yeah, where'd that come from? Yeah. Was it like the mayor called up the chief or something? Or the chief just got nervous, started thinking about it too
much? The biggest speculation that, like, from the circles of people that are kind of connected, think that it probably came from the governor's office.
Oh, shit. But
That is a speculation, but no. I've heard that from sources that I believe to be true, but I can't put that out as fact because I don't know.
Sure.
But the reason that I think that may be true is because I saw all these men who I had respect for just fucking cower. And I told them, I said verbatim, I said, guys, in that video, if you listen to the words that I say that you need to put your beliefs and you need to conduct yourself in a manner where you put your integrity and your ethics before your paycheck. And if you lose your job over standing up for what you believe to be morally and ethically correct, so be it. Mm-hmm. That's part of being a man. I said that verbatim in the video. And now you want me to pull that video down? I said, if I pull that video down, all the people that I am close with that respect who I am as a person, that's gone. Damn. I have no validity in the people that are close to me anymore because I'm a fucking coward. And I said, I can't do that for a paycheck. I can't do that to keep my job. And like, Greg, listen, you're being crazy right now. Okay. Check it out. And then this is what they said. This is what the commander said to me. He goes, I went and did a search. I see that it's up on Twitter. It's up on YouTube. It's up on named it all these platforms. And he goes, and you didn't post it there. You only posted it on Instagram. So it's been copied and ripped. And he goes, so if you pull yours down from Instagram, you're saying, hey, I'm willing to be compliant with the direct order that we received and you can keep your job and it's all good, but your message will still be out there. And I was just like,
it's greasy. That's gross.
Like, yeah, dude, I don't want, I see where this is going. And I don't want any fucking part of it, dude. Mm-hmm. You know? Gosh.
Good on you. A lot of guys would have buckled at that point and thought, damn, I'm 10 years into this, you know?
Yeah. And dude, like, man, when they said that to me, my wife was actually, I got off shift and they'd call me and my wife was riding shotgun in our 4Runner and she knows me like, and she's looking at me and she's like, hey, I know where this is going. Right. And I said, I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm the man you fucking married and I don't bend a knee to motherfuckers. I never have. I'm a fighter in my heart.
Cause once you do, you're done. You're done. Everything you've stood for your whole adult life is now done.
Exactly. And so I'm like, okay, well, here we go. I'm going to start a new phase of my life. I had a jiu-jitsu academy already, but my jiu-jitsu academy was more of a hobby. It didn't produce, it was always in the red. It never produced money, right? Like we had like 22 students and really it was more like 22 friends where we just had our own little club where we trained as much as we could, you know? Mm-hmm. But once I got fired, I was like, okay, this jiu-jitsu academy, I'm going to put a lot of energy into it now. And I'm going to try and make this become something that's like a viable source of income. And dude, we have 170 members now.
Dude, we're
in the middle of building a second facility because we've outgrown where we're at.
Yeah.
And it's like, the reason that I like to tell people this story is because I went into the unknown. I took a risk because I felt like I was doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And to go back to the universe, you can call it God, you can call it karma, or just, maybe just like having positive energy and manifesting stuff. But we are now financially better off through jiu-jitsu than I ever was as a police officer.
Isn't that crazy?
The reason that I think it's important to put this message out there is because there's a lot of cops out there. There's a lot of soldiers. There's a lot of people in
what am I going to do? What am I going to do if what I get out? I think you hit upon something that I want to highlight really important is it's always important to have something kind of on the side because I think that's what traps a lot of people. I know when I left the Navy, I knew it was time for me to leave. I was no longer happy. I'm locking horns with the Command Master Chief. I left there not knowing what the fucking next move was. And it was scary being in my late 20s. Now, I kind of like those moments because you really know what you're made of. It's you're thrust out into the unknown. Yep. But to me, it's like a sense of adventure. I felt like an old Western. I'm on my horse just riding off into the horizon and I don't know what's going to fucking happen next. I actually like shit like that. Yeah. But I think for a lot of people, it makes them nervous. And every time I've done that, I've landed on my feet and done better. Like you, I went active duty to contracting. Yep. Now I'm making $2,000 a month to $15,000 a month. Like, holy shit. And that was just from saying, fuck you, I'm out. And so I've learned, like you've done, when you leave something, you go into the unknown. If you do it the right way, you oftentimes right around the corner is a much better opportunity. So I'm glad you highlighted that. But I think it's important for people to realize maybe you do have kind of that side hustle or a passion that you can transition to like you did. Well, hey, I got this academy. It's kind of just fun with some bros, but I can turn this into something. Let's put some energy into it.
Yeah. And dude, one of the biggest things that we did was we started a kids program because I didn't teach kids jiu-jitsu. I used to despise teaching kids jiu-jitsu.
That's tough.
Because you're trying to get them engaged and they're looking off in the corner and twiddling their thumbs,
picking their nose.
But it's like anything else. You're not good at guitar until you play guitar for a while. Yeah, you're not good at shooting until you shoot for a while. You're not good at engaging kids in jiu-jitsu until you do it for a while. And now I feel like I've finally found my groove. And now, dude, going to the gym to open up for kids class, it's like my favorite time of the week.
Yeah, but you're pumped. The energy kids throw out there, too. Dude, it's so innocent and fun. Yeah. Turns you into a kid, too, you know?
But something I think is important to highlight about walking into the unknown is like success isn't your who pays your paycheck, like who signs your paycheck at the bottom. Dude, success is a mindset. You know, and if you go into whatever realm you're stepping into with a positive mindset and you're motivated and you're willing to work hard, like you can't fail at that. But the thing is, it's going to come with some discomfort and it's going to come with some adversity. Yep. And dude,
all for whatever does. Reason. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the American culture, we are so used to being warm and being fed and being comfortable. Big and time. Dude, we don't have to confront danger anymore. We get in our cars and they're 75 degrees and we drive to work and then we sit in our cubicle, 75 degrees. Yeah. And it's like people now, for some reason, think facing adversity is a bad thing. And it's like, no,
is a negative comment on social media.
Well, it used to be a part of our daily lives. Imagine being a frontiersman. You got to build your fucking house. You got a farm. You got to hunt. You got to whatever.
Yes, dude. That's what I tell people all the time. Like I talk about it on my show often, like being a human being up until what, maybe 100 years ago or less involved fucking being cold as shit. If you didn't if you didn't chop enough wood and you didn't stoke your fire, you're going to have a cold fucking night. If you didn't have a successful hunt, you're going hungry for a couple days. Yeah, so were your kids.
Yeah.
The tribe that lives fucking 10 clicks up the river valley, dude, they fucking hate you and they might want to take your women or whatever it is, right? Life was full of challenges and that's what makes people become resilient and tough and successful. And we were fortunate enough in a young age to be confronted with a lot of adversity, right?
Well, the military does that. They told us we're going to turn you into the human animal. And I love that. I mean, because you got to survive in the jungle, the desert, the snow, mountains, water, all that stuff. And so unless you get that military experience in a modern society, you just don't get it anymore.
No, like, and I tell this story on my show a lot because I think it kind of highlights exactly what the special operations community is looking for. But when I was in Ranger indoctrination, they had platoon of Rangers going through selection. Each squad was holding a log over our heads, right? And we were out and it was fucking February and it was pissing rain and it was freezing. It's all the shit that just sucks because it's by design, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, listen up, guys. You guys are going to hold those logs over your head in these fields until two people quit. Oh, all right. That is the evolution that we're in right now. Yeah. So it can be 3 minutes, it can be 3 hours, or it can be 3 days. But until we get our two quitters, this evolution will continue.
That's awesome.
And it's funny, everybody always asks when I tell the story, like, well, how long did it take? I was like, I have no fucking idea. Cause yeah. I just went into that dark place and just
go into a zone, dude. Yeah.
Get go into the zone. But I knew like if I were to be one of those two people, I would hate myself for the rest of my life.
Oh, do you know those people do? Yeah, I think about them all the time. Like,
oh. I couldn't do that to myself. Right. Mm-hmm. And, but that's what they're looking for. They're looking for the men that have that in their brain. Right. But at 18, 19 years old, we're going through things like that, that solidify lessons that at 41 years old now still have meaning and still have validity. Mm. And I think America has just been too comfortable for too long. And now the effects of that are now
paying the price for that. Center. Yeah.
And yeah. paying the price well, for it, you know?
You bring up some interesting things because a lot of the things that, unfortunately, that are on there out there from technology to on-demand tools like, you know, DoorDash and all this stuff to make life easy is I think people are growing up and they're not experiencing the real test in life on how you develop integrity. And that's what a lot of this is about, especially your personal experience or when people are faced in a tough situation, such as, you know, is it my job, my livelihood, or is it, do I have to defend what I believe in? Interesting enough, I wanted to get your some thoughts on integrity because, me being the research dork, I had to go look up, your department's, handbook. And I wanted to get your perspective on this wonderfully written paragraph. Says, quote, the department will recruit and hire only those individuals who demonstrate a commitment to service and who possess the traits and characteristics that reflect personal integrity and high ethical standards.
You can't make this stuff up. It's like a bad movie. Right?
It is a bad movie. When you exercise those qualities, then they're like, hey, Greg, come here. Yeah, we can't. Sorry, can you delete that video, bro? Can we?
Yeah. And bro, like I love that you bring that up because integrity to me, and let's see if I can pull this out of my ass. Because in the Army, we have our leadership acronym, and the leadership acronym is all of the leadership traits that they believe soldiers should possess. So it is loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, and personal courage. Military loves their acronyms, right? So that's leadership. And I remember being a fucking kid in boot camp and they're like, listen up, privates. Integrity is the easiest one of the bunch because if you were ever presented with any situation and you have two choices to make in your heart, you already know the right one, period. Very often the right one will be the more uncomfortable one. It may ruffle some feathers. It may cause you some more adversity and some more turmoil, but in your heart, you already know the right answer. Everybody does. It's just, what are you going to take, the easy path or are you going to take the hard path? And I remember being a kid in boot camp. I'm like, man, they're right. You do know. Like when I was a stupid young fucking kid getting drunk and driving around and racing my car.
You know it's wrong.
All the dumb shit and getting in fights at parties and stuff. All the dumb shit that I ever did. I knew it was dumb shit. Mm-hmm. You know what
your
I mean?
Your mind can justify it though. Your mind can manipulate it. But your heart is always your compass. You know.
And it's like, true. Man, that stuck with me. Because to this day, if you are confronted with a decision, you already know. You already fucking know what direction to go. But you start negotiating with yourself and this and that, and well, this that could possibly cause this outcome and all this shit. And it's like, that's where shit gets real convoluted. But integrity, you already know what to do. And I feel like if people would embrace that, it's like, you might not be saying the kindest things to people. You might not be doing things that are the most popular decision, but at the end of the day, you're following your truth. Yes. And that's all you can fucking ask of people.
I think it's also sad that we have all these, you know, creeds and oaths and, you know, whatever, when you join up for a bigger organization, be it military, be it law enforcement. And guess what? 10 out of 10 documents has integrity in it. It's just a fact.
Yeah. Well, it used to be a fundamental principle with our government, with our military, with law enforcement. And now it seems to be kind of a lost.
It's a buzzword now.
It is. People say it, but then when you actually stand up for what you believe is your truth, you get penalized for it. And I don't know, like, what you can do. I know one thing that we all share is the concerns that we see what's happening in Canada. We see the cops turning on their own people and forcing, like, imagine the message it would have sent the world if the cops would have stood with those truckers and said, fuck you. It would have been a shift in the universe, bro. It would have been like, the only time I seen that was the French protest where the riot cops took their helmets off and stood with the crowd. That was so powerful.
That's what I said. I posted that on my Instagram. I was like, who's going to be the first cop to take your gear off and
stand with them,
join with them. Yep.
To turn around.
And like, you know, if one dude did that, there might be two or three that would do it. It's so contagious, that bravery.
Oh, yeah.
Then when everyone would fall in, man, it just takes that one dude to break ranks and say, fuck this shit. This is wrong.
But bro, I mean, I don't know how far down the conspiratorial rabbit hole you want to go, but
let's go.
Our fucking government is no longer serving us.
No,
they are
serving itself.
They are manipulating us in a manner to sustain, to ensure their own power and their own wealth.
Yep.
I mean, how the fuck did Nancy Pelosi just buy a $25 million mansion?
So
what are we talking about here? On a $200,000? I mean, dude, my salary was comparable to hers, and my house is $330,000. What are we fucking talking about, right? Like, if people can't see what's going on, right? And to go back to integrity, like, anyone that was that held the rank of E3 or higher understood what a clusterfuck the Afghanistan withdrawal was. They collapsed their security perimeter first. That's Ranger School 101. Any infantryman could be like, oh no, you play security. Then you go inside and you conduct your operation. Then that element pulls out.
Yeah.
And you collapse your security. Then you collapse
security. Yeah.
So when they did that backwards, that tells me either we have the most inept people on planet Earth in charge, or it was calculated and they fucked this up on purpose. But the reason I bring it up is there was one man that said, hey,
That Marine dude. He made that video.
Stu Scheller.
Yeah.
He's like, hey guys, that was done wrong, and someone should be held accountable for it because very bad decisions were made. Yes. And they fucking put him in jail.
One guy that says, hey, the one maybe guy. Not the other dudes that just fucked it all up. The one guy that said, hey guys,
who's going to take some accountability?
He's going to put their name on this. Yeah.
And they fucking hammered him. And that was a big, I mean, I've already seen the downward trajectory of our country. But when you have, he was a standout leader. He didn't have anything bad in his fucking record. Like, he was a battalion commander or something.
Yeah, right? And he was a ground pounder too. He wasn't some admin dude. He was a legit dude, had been overseas, done his time.
When you have a legit leader saying, hey guys, we need some answers. We need some accountability. Get him out of here. Throw him in the brig. You know. We're fucking, our system is corrupt, man.
I know.
And at what point do men like us say, we've had enough of you cocksuckers? Yeah. Like, is that the next phase? Because everyone's like, well, we can change it with our votes and you get involved in politics. And it's like, man, that's one way.
That would be great if that works.
Like, it's by the ballot or by the fucking bullet. And I feel like we're running out of options, dude.
We're going down a road that's scary. Yeah.
I think a lot of people would, respect the perspective that you're sharing. I think the litmus test is going to be we've had veterans on that are running for office. The true test is, are the veterans going to join the bullshit for the wrong reasons? I'm here because this is how you get rich and I'm going to be part of the corruption. Or am I really here because I took an oath to this country and I'm here to make a difference because I'm sick of this and I'm going to represent the American people and the veteran community. And if they crumble... If they crumble, that to me personally is the biggest indicator.
It'll be the other option. It'll be option B. You know, everybody wants the peaceful political solution. But I know, Greg, I'm sure I get a lot of text messages, phone calls, conversations, and there's a lot of frustration because you have, probably a couple million veterans, if you think from the Vietnam War down, that are just like, this is going to be on our watch. History is going to look back at our generation of warfighter and say, you guys did nothing as the ship was going down. And I know nobody I know wants their name attached to that. We were the reason why America failed because we had hundreds of thousands, if not a couple million vets that did nothing. Yeah.
Bro, I won't say it on your show because I don't want to get you shadow banned or have agents knocking on your doors.
But like, it wouldn't be the episode, first time. I don't care.
The episode of my show is called The Endless Endeavor, that comes out this Thursday. Okay. I called it The American Insurgent because, dude, there will be a time when, just like you said, if we can't change the trajectory with putting the right people in office, there has to be a time where we reconfigure this fucking system and we take the corruption and we fix it with a fucking noose, man. That day. And I'm not saying that's going to be my lifetime, but I don't want to leave that to my kids either.
Well, if
I
see the trajectory of
this country and I leave that problem, because a lot of people say, like, well, man, like, you don't want to stir the pot too hard, because, like, dude, you got a family and you got a business, and it's like, no,
exactly,
I want to stir the pot harder because
you want to preserve that. Yeah, you don't want to leave a shit situation for your kids. And the thing is our generation that actually has combat experience, 2 decades worth of it amongst all of our friends, we don't want to get too old where we're combat ineffective. And then what?
That's right.
Younger, weaker generation supposed to figure this out. And they're back to these little silly deployments to Thailand. Like, it's our generation's responsibility that if the political solution fails and we don't do something, what are we leaving our kids?
That's right, man.
And they won't have the ability to resist it because they don't have that skill set.
This is like verbatim what I said on this episode, is like, the weakest, most incompetent fucking men in our country are telling us what to do. Mm-hmm. You got guys like fucking Justin Trudeau and Gavin Newsom with their fucking little suits on and their slick back hair and their beady little eyes saying, no, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And what these cocksuckers don't realize is they turned us into fucking warriors with their fucking policies and their fucking warmongering and all the shit that they did. And at the time, the military industrial complex may have made them a bunch of fucking money, but you know what else it did? It made me a fucking savage.
Yeah.
It made me capable of shooting men in the face from 5 feet away and sleeping like a fucking baby that night. And I'm not alone. There's millions of us.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You made us fucking war hardened, and now you're trying to shit on us, and fucking wait and see how that fucking plays out for you.
Well, we also had this dream too. When the war was over, or when we were done with the war, we were going to come back home. We were going to build families. We were going to live in peace. We wanted to ride off into the sunset. And now you're fucking with that. That's where it gets fucking dangerous. And not only are you fucking with us, but they do whatever the fuck they want to do. All these mandates and shit. Then they're with their little parties and they're not wearing their masks and they're such hypocrites. And I don't know why it doesn't upset more people, because I guess if you're brainwashed and indoctrinated, the truth can stare you in the face and you don't give a shit. But when guys like me and you see that, it pisses us off.
Bro, also, they were telling me I had to close my jiu-jitsu academy down. And it's like, I already got fired as a police officer.
Yeah.
You motherfuckers think I'm closing my academy down?
It's your livelihood.
And
dude,
we were getting letters and calls and emails like, there's a report that you guys are training. And it's like, yeah, motherfucker, I am. Do something about it. And dude, I was bringing my rifle and my fucking body armor to the gym. And I told my wife, and bro, you know how like when you hug your fucking woman goodbye before you go on deployment, that feeling?
That's sad. You like, go to work in America, you got to do the same hug?
Well, but
and I was like,
put perspective, God,
tough, man.
Let's put perspective. Let's think about this. It was only, I don't know, 6-7 months ago, they finally took down the barricades around the Capitol building. Now they're putting them up
going
again.
Back up.
They're going back up for the
truckers are coming out.
So, hear Greg saying this, people are like, this guy's extremist thing. No, these are signs of a police state.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they're scared because they know what they're doing is fucked up. That's why they have those defensive postures.
If I followed their orders, I'd be fucking broke right now. I built that academy. And you know what's interesting about it is me saying go fuck you to the government actually made my academy grow exponentially, because a lot of places were closed down. I had tons of people like, hey, this is the only place where my kids can come and train. Hey, you don't require masks in here. And I would always tell people, I respect your views. I respect your political affiliations. If you're not comfortable here, I understand that.
Yeah.
But this is what we do. And if you want to be part of it, cool. And if you think it's too dangerous or whatever, then the solution is overwhelmingly simple. Stay away. Like my jiu-jitsu team is not going to get you sick if you don't come to my jiu-jitsu academy.
Yeah.
And bro, you know what's so like validating is now even the fucking government is like, well, yeah, I guess masks didn't work. And I guess the vaccine didn't work. And I guess natural immunity is more powerful than our vaccine. All this bullshit that, like, if you would just be a critical thinker, mm-hmm. we fucking saw it months and months and months and months ago. Yeah. And it's crazy that we have to arrive at a place like this where we're considering violence on our own fucking soil just to run a gym. Like, yeah. what are we talking about, dude? I did want to give a shout out because you guys talked about some veterans that are running. I don't know if you guys know Tony Cowden and Joe Kent.
We had Tony on. Yeah, yeah, we had Tony on.
Oh, you already had Tony on.
Tony's
the real deal. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like so Tony. Well, when you said, like, hey, there's some veterans that when they get in, are they going to get pulled into the fucking the cesspool?
Yeah,
not Tony.
Nope.
Yeah. Not Joe. So there's some of them out there. I met Tony through and you knew Seth Farewell too.
Oh yeah.
And Seth and I became very good friends in the contracting days because he was with Triple Canopy. And I met Tony through Seth, and seeing some of our guys now taking that fucking leading that charge to try and change Washington, man, it's the last fucking hope.
Well, I'm glad, because if they weren't doing that, or if they fail at that because the corruption's too great, then there's option B. And I think that's what they recognize, is that we're at a crossroads. And if we don't win this politically, they're very aware of what's going to happen. And so I'm glad they're at least given that a chance, a good shot. And well, it's interesting to see. I'm hoping, like you always hope for the best, too, you know, but you got to prepare for the worst as well, you know.
When people hear men like us talk about this stuff, it's like, I'm not some fucking crazy motherfucker. Like, I look at myself in the mirror often and be like, hey, are you still grounded in reality? Like,
yeah, you're not sure.
You're not getting pulled out into these crazy fucking fringes, right? Like,
right.
But do you know how many people lost their businesses that weren't willing to say, fuck you? Yeah. Like, dude, we still, in Washington state, there's still the mask mandate. Like, what are we talking about?
So crazy.
You know?
And they know it doesn't do shit. And they still, well, obviously, if you put yourself in their shoes, it's a power thing. 100%.
That's what I'm saying, man.
They knew a few months into this virus that these things aren't effective, but we're going to keep, instead of just being man enough to say, hey, guys, we didn't know what to do at first, so we implemented all 100%. These measures, but they're not working, so we're going to adjust. Kind of like if you and I were going to hit a target and we got last-minute intel, we would change our plans. It wouldn't be like, we're going in no matter what. It might be like, hey, let's just talk about this. Now there's whatever situations change, you have to adapt some way to the current situation. Our politicians, they stayed with the original plan.
And if you fucked up, let's say, I've done this. We hit a house in Afghanistan looking for an HVT, and we found out we got bad intel and we hit the wrong fucking house.
Shit, you gotta own it.
Have to try and correct the problem. You have to try and make amends. You have to come, like, imagine if a politician, a fucking governor or a fucking senile president walked up to his podium and was like, listen, guys, based on this information at this time, we thought this was the right thing to do. And the only thing that I can do is fucking ask for forgiveness because we made some crucial mistakes and it costs people their businesses. It costs some people their lives. And the only thing that we can do is try and move forward in a better unified manner. And this is what we think is the solution at this point in time.
Like, that'd be a breath of fresh air, dude.
That's a little bit of humility. We've never seen a politician.
They just doubled down.
Well,
it was wrong.
Because you keep using the word politician. That's the difference between a leader and a politician.
Yeah.
We're seeing a leader in the Ukraine, not a politician. Like, we're seeing a leader.
Do you remember, and I don't know if you guys know Jocko personally or not, but he made that video of the Afghanistan debacle. He goes, hey, if I was president, this is what I would say. And it's like,
that was a good video.
Oh, shocking.
Yeah.
That a leader could say, hey, you know what? I made some crucial errors. I read some intel, maybe a little incorrectly. And now this is my solution. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't exist in American politics anymore.
No.
Bro, you couldn't have a marriage. You couldn't have a friendship. Like you couldn't have any relationship on planet Earth if you weren't willing to admit when you were wrong. That's part of being human.
You have to.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We are fundamentally flawed fucking creatures and we fuck up. So be it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what? I think change is coming. And again, I think a lot of us here in the United States are watching some of the, you know, the outliers and probably around the world too, because changes are happening. You know, obviously we have the first one coming up. We have the midterms coming, this election, which is a good test. But I also think what's kind of happened this past week is inspiring and another outlier. You're seeing what a lot of people thought would be Russia rolling over a country, lay down the arms. He's totally misinterpreted that situation. And now not only are people in the United States watching or all over the world, they're being inspired. They're watching people fight for what is right and what they believe in and for their own sovereignty. And again, it kind of reminds you what this country was built on and what is truly important. So I do think with the elections happening, the truckers on their way to Washington observing Ukraine, maybe this will be the final reminder for all Americans that we need to get back to basics. And I'm really hoping so.
No, I hope you're correct. And I think, the right set of circumstances to inspire people into taking action. I mean, that's been happening since the dawn of mankind, right? Everybody should have their line drawn in the sand where if they get pushed too far, okay, now it's time. Yeah. And I feel like Americans, a lot of them are coming to terms with that or maybe starting to understand that. That's starting something I talk about on my show a lot. Mm-hmm. I said, hey, like in the military, we do something called war gaming where it's like, okay, if we're en route to the target and this happens, what do we do? Mm-hmm. Hey, if this bird goes down, what do we do? And you have all of these contingencies set up. And that way, when you're confronted with a potential unforeseen problem, you've at least done a rep in your mind before. You know, hey, this is how we would cross load.
That's why you're able to react instead of deer in a headlights. Yeah. Like, oh, shit.
Exactly. Or, you know, and set up rally points or whatever it may be. And not that. And I don't say this to people because some people think like, oh, we're these crazy veterans living in fear. It's like, no. This is the opposite of fear. Mm-hmm. This is giving yourself room to breathe and like, okay, I can actually relax now because I know that these are my hard lines and these are things that I'm not willing to be pushed past. And like, for me, one of them was closing my gym down. I drew that hard line and I was like, okay, I know it sounds crazy, but if I have to die over this gym, that's the commitment I'm making to myself. So people need to ask themselves, like, where is your hard line and what are you willing to commit to? Because if all you do is just go along to get along, your children are going to be cleaning up this mess one day. That's not fair to them. No. You know?
Or they won't even have anything clean up. They'll just be in lock and step under a new something we don't even recognize
North
anymore.
Korean shit where you're just born into misery, you know?
Exactly.
No, and it's going to be a lot harder to turn it around at that point. You know what I'm saying? Look at all these countries that snatched up guns a while back. And now it's like, oh, hey, internment camps and we're trampling your rights. And like, I honestly think the Second Amendment is one of the last things that is keeping our government from just all out authoritarianism
and other countries at bay. Because if you think about it, I mean, it was such a brilliant part of our Constitution. You know, again, at any time,
Japanese said that there's a gun behind every blade of grass. Even if you blow through our military, we're waiting for you. You got a ton of veterans, a ton of fucking bubbas with shotguns, gangbangers with fucking AKs. Like, we will fuck you up. You know?
And you know what? Like, I tell people all the time in regards to Afghanistan because they're like, "Fuck, dude, it took 20 years, but guess what? The Taliban won." You say whatever you want. They're the fucking victors. Mm-hmm. And that's because you can beat a military. You can't beat an ideology.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Exactly.
There's men fighting in Afghanistan during, you know, the final years that were born after our first deployments. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like they grew up in a fucking, in a post 9/11 world and they're still fighting. And it's like, good luck defeating an ideology. because you can't take that from people. You can.
Well, I think our ideology in America is
their ideology.
Is freedom is our big war cry in America. It has been since the revolution. And I think that that's the ideology that we will fight for. We will die for, and it will unite us. I think a key pivotal thing we talked about earlier is law enforcement. And if there's one thing I want to say on this podcast, especially with you, you and I have very similar backgrounds. To our cops, don't be like the Ottawa people, because you are more pivotal than you realize. If push comes to shove, you have to really decide, are you with the people or are you with these government people who are just using you as pawns and they don't give a fuck about you? So when it comes down to this moment, whether it's the truckers going out to DC, whatever may happen in America, like in any country, the law enforcement response is going to be huge.
Yeah.
100%, man. And police officers need to remember, like, dude, you're not part of their corrupt system. You're part of our community. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got 10 police officers on my jiu-jitsu team. I got a bunch of cops that work out at CrossFit downstairs. And like, I know your families. I know your kids. Like, you're us and we're you. Mm-hmm. It's not you're with this politically corrupt machine. That's not who they are as people. They just get pulled into it with all the bullshit. But who they are as people is Americans, their fathers, their sisters, their
wives. They are just citizens. Yeah, they are regular. And you realize that when you become a cop, you don't see them as a separate entity. You realize I'm the same dude I was. I still have family problems, financial problems, whatever it may be. And we do break bread with going to the gym with people, going to ball games with people. And so they need to remember that. And if you resist, look at what your department's going to do to you, or the mayor or the governor or the chief is going to do to you. Realize, one, safety in numbers. Yes. You guys got to get enough people together to make a difference. Onesies and twosies, they can pick off. But when you group up.
Of course. And that's another reason why I feel they probably are like, get this guy out of here. Because if you see someone standing up, that's the first thing that can inspire somebody else to stand
Bravery's
up.
Bravery is contagious.
Courage is contagious.
It is.
And but just because courage is contagious doesn't mean you have to wait. You can be the first one. You can be the epicenter, you know, and people are looking for that. People are looking for leadership. People are looking for that person to break ranks and say, you know what? I'm done with this.
It's a ripple in the pond. It's very just ripples out, man. When that one pebble hits, man, be that pebble. Start that ripple.
Simple idea, but you got to think on how many opportunities every day people face, and they either are not aware of it or they're ignoring it. For example, okay, right now, like I mentioned, they're setting up those fences around the Capitol. The person at that job should go, wait a second, this is the people's Capitol. What am I doing? Yes. What am I doing?
Yeah.
Okay, you're telling me for the past, you know, how many decades that the FBI, every three-letter agency out there, can't handle threat assessment and defense. We need these barricades.
Because they know they're doing some shady shit. You know, so it's why drug dealers have reinforced doors, because they know they're doing shady shit.
But again, it doesn't always have to be the police officer or someone in the military. It's as simple as, wait a second, they're telling me to put a barricade around our country's capital?
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Yeah, if the contractor said, fuck you, you know what I mean? It just, everyone can do their part. And right now, guys like us, we're using our voices. That's our part at this point in the fight. We're trying to spread the word, the good vibes, social media, podcast. Obviously, if this can keeps getting kicked down the road, there's other options. But right now, that's our part. We're trying to inspire, inform, educate, lead from the front with our voices. And so even us, we're doing our small part, trying to get ahead of the game a little bit, you know?
No, I love that. That's a great point, because one thing that I saw in the special operations community, and I'm sure you saw it too, it's like Rangers or SEALs or the recon guys, like there's a lot of them that started to get that, like, oh, fuck, we're badass. And like you walk into the chow hall and you got your IR tape and no name tapes and everybody's looking at you like, oh, who are these guys, you know? And it's like some guys fed on that. And I would always say, like, guys, the fucking guy, the mechanics that are fixing our fucking trucks.
Yeah.
If our trucks don't work, we are combat ineffective.
For sure.
If we don't have the cooks that are preparing our fucking meals,
we ain't
guess
doing
what?
Shit.
Combat ineffective. We don't have the fucking guy who's sitting back in California flying the fucking drones overhead. All right. Yeah. We don't have fucking air support. Like, this is a machine and it's a team. And sure, we feel like we're you know, like we're the main effort. We're the, everything revolves around us, right? Well, actually we're a cog in the wheel, and for it to work, all the cogs have to work. And it's the same thing you just said, the contractors putting up the gates, you know, it's like every single level of community can do their part. Yes. And when you know something's wrong and you feel it, don't be part of it. It's that simple, man. You know?
Yeah.
It really is. You just got to be aware of it, like we've been talking about, and just have the balls say, I'm not going along with this. I'm not.
Well, we got to get ahead of it by putting that message out. The more people talk about it, the more people prepare themselves, the more people make that decision. You know what? They're willing to pay me $200,000, let some other contractor do it. I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. Yeah. But if every contractor refused, was Pelosi going to go fucking hang gates? You know what I mean? If everyone refused, they would be like, I think we have a problem. Because that's, if they're smart enough to put a pulse on the you know, society, they would say, dude, no one's even wanting to throw up gates, that we might have a situation on our hands.
Yeah.
What a signal that would send, you know?
Yeah.
I know,
yeah.
Right?
So,
and that's, I mean, that's exactly why they made January 6th out to be this huge deal, is because they did realize, oh, I guess we could have a problem on our hands.
It scared them. Because it wasn't your city burning down. It wasn't our city burning down. It was a couple people trespass. Let's call it what it is. Okay. Bro, a couple windows broke. So, you know, I know as cops, if I was on scene, a couple people, maybe some criminal damage, and then some trespassing. It was a trespassing. Yeah. That's it. It was ridiculous.
Oh, but there was a homicide that wasn't treated like a homicide on property, which is always.
Oh, yeah.
That was weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
That
so,
no, but I mean, yeah. I mean, we could beat this fucking dead horse. But the thing that I always say about the insurrection, it's like, again, go back and take any military private and talk to him about taking down a building. Well, you're going to have a fucking perimeter set up. You're going to have points, access, ingress and egress controlled. You're going to do some basic things that weren't even close to being accomplished. Oh, they didn't even think about them. That wasn't their mindset. Yeah. It wasn't, they weren't taking that building down. They didn't even have weapons. Like, get the fuck out of here with this stuff. But they say it's an insurrection and everybody just gobbles up their fucking media. And now those people are being held without due process.
Like, well, it sets a dangerous precedence because they love that verbiage, domestic terrorist. Who do you think is going to be the first two dudes they put on that list? Guys like me and you.
But wait a second.
Because they know we're the threats. 100%.
Wait, you want to talk about irony? The whole world and all these people here in the United States are outraged that Putin's making these arrests and the demonstrating what's going on, right? What's the difference?
Exactly.
Come on, guys. Where's the outrage for that? These people are still in jail. It's the same thing. They decided to speak up. I mean, the double standard is just, it's just craziness.
Dude, I shared a video a couple days ago of Trudeau on his podium saying Canada will, how did he articulate it? He's like, the Canadian people and Canada's government will stand with Ukraine because we believe in people having personal freedom and the right to choose and live how they want.
Did he just hear himself?
And he goes, yeah, we will not stand for authoritarianism. And I'm just like,
holy
dude,
shit.
Yeah. Look in the mirror, pal.
Do they believe their own lies, or do they just know that they can just do whatever the fuck they want?
I think that's what it is, man. Yes. They're untouchables in their own minds, dude. Yep,
that's exactly
he has
right.
to know. Wait a minute. I just got done oppressing my own people, but I'm going to bag on the Russians for.
Yeah. Like, trampling. And you guys follow Sean Zimmer? Do you know who he is? He's that big jacked Viking looking motherfucker.
Yeah. I follow him. He's awesome.
Him and I have talked a little bit through Instagram, and you only have to talk to that guy for 5 minutes. He's a solid fucking dude, right? He was front and center of the protests. And he was saying, like, a big part of what we did was zero violence. We didn't swear at the police. We didn't throw things at them. We didn't instigate. When they would fucking be violent towards us, we would just fucking, like, walk backwards and accept their aggression. Like, they didn't want to give the media or the government
any excuse,
to show, like, oh, look at these guys. They're extremists.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they still sent the cops in there. They still trampled those fucking people. They still fucking hit them with gas. I mean, that fucking old woman getting trampled by a fucking Clydesdale or whatever. Like, that's dude, horrible. If that was my mom, we'd have a pissed, problem,
dude. Yeah, big.
We gotta fucking like you better fucking sleep with one eye open. But dude, they did everything right, and they were still portrayed as fucking terrorists.
Yeah.
They're talking about some of the people that organized that rally looking at 10 years in prison. Like, what? The fuck? You know?
That's so crazy.
Yeah, we'll see, man. We'll see. I was hopeful that the Canadian people and the Canadian police could, just like you said, they could have set that precedence, and it could have changed the tone of the whole fucking planet, dude. You know,
I was hoping, man, I was throwing up some prayers like, come on, dudes, if you guys just do the right thing, it would be so pivotal in human history right now. And, you know, they had to be thinking that we're not the only guys that had those thoughts out there. Like,
I know, man, damn,
what a missed opportunity. And that's my plea to law enforcement here. The Ottawa guys missed it. But if you guys do the right thing, and especially as Americans, with our mantra being freedom, it would be so powerful if law enforcement just said, hey, these guys aren't doing anything wrong. We're not fucking with them. In fact, we're standing with them. They take their shit off and stand with them. That would be just.
I want cops to know. Cops need to know. Your government only paints you out to be the selfless hero when it serves them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't give a fuck about you.
Otherwise, they demonize you. Shit.
Like if flavor of the week is fuck cops, the government falls in lockstep with fuck cops.
Perfect example. Defund the police, but now let's refund the police now, because that's what the Democrats saying, right? Let's refund it.
And it's like, dude, cops were just terrible, racist pieces of shit for 15, 18 months.
Yeah.
But now that they're serving the government's mission again, it's like, look at these. Get these heroes on our streets.
It's a fucking game of slap tickle, man.
Don't fall for their fucking bullshit. They don't care about you. They care about you serving them. So they're going to articulate however they need to articulate it to make police officers feel like they owe them something, or they're part of this fucking government. They're
not there to do a job.
They're part of the community.
Yes.
They're part of the community.
Like, that's key, huge. The key word you keep saying is serve. And that's really the agenda that's trying to take over here is from the citizen serving to the police serving. We've gone so far away of them being our representatives and their true mission of representing us. And I could only pray again that change will come where the people in office will understand what that truly means to represent the people. Because again, the funny thing is, our country has a long history of fighting against this type of bullshit. I mean, the whole reason we broke away, our whole independence, is because we didn't want a monarchy. We didn't want to listen to a king. Well, how do you
now think we just have a rotating monarchy? Is all we have?
Yeah.
We just...
Now, what's the difference now? Because you know, you have people that have their castles, and they're, you know, you're now going to be the duke, and you're this, and you have these privileges and this.
Yeah,
and
we're just the little peasants.
We are.
Yeah, it's elites. Yeah, the political elites and us peasants, and that's not
funny.
Okay.
They're not calling it a kingdom. But if you kind of look at it, you know,
set up that way. Yeah.
If King Arthur was to awake right now, he'd come back and be like, "Hey, I recognize
got everything
this.
In place. Everything's all set, right?
I get this, man."
Dude, I said that verbatim on last week's show. I said we're not in a monarchy anymore, but this is still fucking the royalty are now the political elite.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, fucking John Kerry just flew a private jet to some fucking summit to talk about how terrible fucking climate change is. Yeah. And it's like, motherfuckers, dude. Like, what?
People don't
what
see
are we
that.
Talking about, dude?
Yeah.
You know? Get in row 32 where I sit. Yeah. You know what I mean? And fucking fly your ass over there with all the peasants.
Yeah.
You know?
Sit in that middle seat, man.
I want them on a solar powered catamaran.
Yeah. that's right, dude. But like, and here's the other thing, because you'll have some people be like, oh, well, you know, like, actually, if you ran the numbers and one more plane in this, no, shut the fuck up.
Right. Yeah,
it's perception,
of course.
Okay? Oh, yeah,
perception.
Yep.
If you are a leader, you have to show your people. I mean, it's just like if you're
you have to walk the walk, you know,
if your company commander came out and he was unshaven one day,
yeah, so you fuckers need to shave, yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, It's basic leadership principles of ask no man anything that I'm unwilling to do myself.
But
that's where you start to get some validity.
To your point, Greg, other great examples too. So, I mean, obviously, if you're born into super wealth, you know, these families like the Fords or, you know, the whatever, you know, you're talking about lineage of money, right? But now what's kind of funny, like to your point to monarchies and thing, are political. These political families. So like all of a sudden your kids, the laws don't apply. You go into Ivy League schools, you're set. And it doesn't work this way. That's why Tony talked about this and we believe in term limits, things like this. This should not be its own class of people. It should not be its own career field. You shouldn't get rich off this shit. You serve get the fuck out.
Get the fuck out. And one of the best examples that we know our system is infiltrated and being ran by these elitists is like, what is the chance of a father and a son both being the most qualified man in the country to be the president, right? So when you have Bush Senior and then fucking George Bush Junior, he didn't go by Junior, but you know what I'm saying? Like, what the fuck? And then here's another example, husband and wife. Bill Clinton is the most qualified man.
Family dynasties,
And now his wife is running for president. And not only is she running, she thought she was entitled to it.
Dude, she was already throwing up posts congratulating herself, man. Yeah. She already fuck. Like,
dude, those incidents like show you how out of touch these people are with reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the fucking presidency should be a fucking dogfight between highly, highly, highly qualified people. And we get to examine and articulate these people. We get to have long format debates, just like what we're doing right now. We've been discussing it for an hour and 25 minutes. Why can't two presidential candidates sit down and do this on a live feed Zoom that goes to your 100%. Television? So there the whole country gets to listen to these two men articulate how they would overcome all of these different political obstacles for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours.
Fuck
You got Anderson Cooper going.
One-sided questions too. Real softball questions and you know.
And you have 2 minutes to answer and go.
So
your time is up. On to the next question. It's like, dude, we're living in a fucking, like, it's all bullshit. You know?
And all the questions are, they have access
so
to
one-sided.
It. It's such bullshit. You know what? Here, let's put it out there. You know what? Joe Rogan or any
He offered to have them both on and debate. Yeah. He's like, yeah, I'll have both on and let's just do
Come on Greg's podcast. Come on Good Vibes. You want a real conversation with no bullshit and no, you know, circle jerk.
They
you know,
won't do it though. Yeah, Joe Rogan threw out that offer. None of them took it.
Well, of course not. I mean,
that's scary. What do you mean? Yeah. Actually, unprepared. I just have to go be honest and shoot from the hip.
Yes. Because you might, if you're on a live fucking show where you don't have 40 fucking staffers feeding you what you're supposed to fucking say, and you got your earpiece and all the bullshit, you might come to a point where you have to say, you know what, I don't personally know the best answer to that.
You might show that you're human.
I can do. Yeah, and bro, this is what these fuckers don't realize. One of the biggest keys to leadership, and I learned this through jiu-jitsu more than anything. When I got my black belt, there was a red belt there. And like red belts in jiu-jitsu are like unicorns. I've met one red belt, and this is what he said to me. He goes, hey, as a new black belt, the best thing that you can tell other jiu-jitsu practitioners is I don't know. Okay.
Yep.
That is going to serve you better than anything, because once you have a black belt around your waist, people are always going to come to you and they're always going to look to you for answers.
Yep. Mm.
But as you know, just because you have a black belt, your jiu-jitsu still, like the day I went from brown to black, I wasn't a different fighter. I wasn't a different grappler, but now there's a different set of expectations on you.
Yes.
And so he's like, make sure you stay humble. And if you don't know the answer to something, look them right in the eye and say, I don't know the answer, but I'm going to go and I'm going to do some research and I'm going to talk to the right people and I'm going to get back to you.
Exactly.
And that's acceptable. Why are people so scared?
Yeah.
It's okay to say, I don't know, but hey, I'll find out, man. It's a great question.
How come these old school martial artists can 100% grasp that concept, but in Washington, that's unacceptable.
Egos.
No one man or woman can, we don't have the capacity in our fucking brains to have solutions to every fucking, the climate and political unrest and foreign policy and the economy and on and on and on. Like, part of leadership is surrounding yourself with the right men and women to help guide you.
Yeah, you know? You gotta have a team. You gotta have a staff.
Yeah. One thing that you said that I think is a very good point is, like you said, our politicians are supposed to be representatives of the people, right? Yeah. So there are times when my own personal opinions should get put on the back burner because I am representing constituents.
That's true. Right?
If the majority of people in my demographic or my area feel a certain way and the voting lines show that, then when it's my turn to fucking yay or nay in Congress, it's not about what I want.
That's what the job is.
But they don't. Yes. They vote how they want, as opposed to everyone in my district.
Or with a lobbyist, or what money's going to your coffer. I mean, that's where we moved away fundamentally. Because again, it's just that simple, people. You're supposed to represent the voices of your community. It doesn't matter what your personal fucking opinion is. It's not your job to have an opinion.
I'm just thinking about this right now as we're sitting here. You know, 100 years ago when the representative would have to ride in on horseback and be like, okay, this, you know, I represent these people and this is what they believe I should vote. And you raise your hand, bro. Like, we're talking across the world in real time right now. There could be a new way where maybe representatives are almost an archaic way of thinking because all the people can be connected and share their perspectives in real fucking time. That's interesting. But it also leaves, I mean, the more we rely on technology, the more people are going to infiltrate it and the more fuckery that's going on. So who knows what the right answer is.
Yeah, but you know what? There's a simplicity into that idea, right? Because to your point, the gentleman on the horse would actually go to their church, and because that's where they would assemble back then, and get critical mass of opinion. And then he would go ride. So what happens now is our politicians really don't even, they don't even care. They just go sit in an office and say, I'll vote either way. Yeah. They don't take the time to go work. They work the street to get elected. But when it comes back to issues, do they come back and say, listen, I need to hold a minimum of 10 town halls. I need to go talk to at least 5,000 of my constituents to get their voice. No, it doesn't happen.
No.
Well, and shit changes too. You got to keep in touch with your people. Like, maybe your community is frustrated, and at first they say defund the police, but then they see a crime skyrocket and they're like, no, that was a bad idea. No, we want more cops, you know. So you have to stay on top of that stuff because issues oftentimes change. Maybe a community is misinformed because the media brainwashed them, but then they realize, I look out my window, I'm seeing carjackings. This is not working, you know. We're sorry, we were wrong. But then the representative is still on that narrative of defund the police, and they're not listening to their constituents. I'm sure it happens all the time.
I thought one of the funniest things I have this week is when Biden was asked the question about China, and he goes, I'm not prepared to answer that question. I thought, you know what? Bro. I'm going to take that logic. And now I'm going to deploy Biden's all throughout my life. If I get pulled over, were you speeding, son? I'm not prepared to answer that question. My son, I'm going to teach him that too. Did you clean your room? I'm not prepared to answer that question. I mean,
that's sad though. That's how they operate.
That's our president. That's the president.
As soon as they brought China into the equation, he's like,
he gets nervous. Oh yeah.
How can I navigate this one and not piss off who
piss off my handlers,
puppet master? Yeah. You know, and so it's just like, you know what? I'm not prepared to answer that question. Is congruent with go fuck yourself.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, absolutely. Sure. The PC way of saying go fuck yourself. Exactly. I'm not prepared to listen.
We should make a T-shirt. That's a good slogan. That
might have to be for the Vibe Tribe out there. Let's try working that into our sentences this week.
I'm gonna try that at work. See how I fare with that.
But that's what's so funny. Oh, that's the president of the United States, the free leader of the world, and he thinks that's a good enough answer to get away with it. But if any of us were at work, hey, Ryan, I really need that report on my desk by tomorrow evening. I'm not prepared to answer that.
Half the time he just walks away from the microphone. Have you seen that shit? He just walks away. You're like, where's he going?
Bro, there was one reporter that called out Jen Psaki, and they're like, hey, it's no longer like a theory. It's been proven that Biden is following instructions from somebody. Like he's told when to walk away. He's told when to stop answering questions. Oh, yeah. And the reporter's like, so who is that person? You know, and they're like, oh, the president speaks for himself and the president doesn't follow other people's orders. And it's like,
oh, bullshit. No.
You didn't get the question. We said, we already know that he does.
Yeah.
Okay? This he's is no very, longer a debate.
Yeah.
We're wondering just who is his puppet master? That's all we're fucking asking, you know?
It's Obama with a Mr. Microphone. Remember those Mr. Microphones? Yep.
Dude, did you see the video where he walked by the Marines and he looks at the Marine? He goes, salute the Marines.
Yeah.
And it's like, bro, like you can't. Again,
it's so Manchurian. Back home,
it's a fucking funny. Bad movie, dude.
It is. It is.
And dude, when they put him like during the DNC prelims, right? When they had, I don't know, 10 different candidates up there, they had Tulsi Gabbard up there, right?
Yeah.
And every time I give Tulsi Gabbard praise, my followers are like, hey, you fucking, she's a fucking Democrat, blah, blah, blah. It's like, listen, guys, I'm a conservative by nature. Okay.
Sure.
And I fall in line with more Republicans than I do Democrats.
For sure,
but that doesn't mean, like, if you say that, you're part of the problem. Like when Tulsi Gabbard speaks,
she's a reasonable person. Yeah.
But not only is she reasonable, the words that are coming out of her mouth, I can see it in her eyes, are congruent with how she feels in her heart.
Yes.
Bro. And I say the same thing about Bernie Sanders. Do I like Bernie Sanders? No.
Nope.
Do I like his policies? No. But I believe that he says what he believes to be the truth.
Yeah.
And bro, that's what we need from our politicians.
Well, and you can talk to those people. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, don't
love or hate their policy. Hey, this is where they stand. This is what they believe. Now we can actually have an authentic conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and dude, there you go.
Tulsi Gabbard is she's a critical thinker. She's a smart fucking woman. She has a lot of real world experience.
Oh yeah.
And so I saw her up there and it's like, well, this seems like a no brainer, right? But out of everybody, fucking Buttigieg or whatever his fucking name was. And you go down the list of people, right? And it goes from, in my opinion, Tulsi Gabbard at the top of this list. And you go down to the bottom and it's fucking demented, stuttering Biden at the very bottom of it.
The least likely, like no way. That
I said, like, there's 0% chance.
Oh yeah,
that he gets in. So then when they said that he was the nominee, I was like, oh, this is what they're doing. They must have ran some calculations and some numbers and knew they couldn't beat Trump this time around. So they just wanted to basically put cannon fodder out there because they don't want Trump to run over a potential real candidate. Who would be like, think if the Democratic Party came to the table with this super charismatic, warm, intelligent person for the 2024 election. I was like, maybe this is the playbook. And then he won. And I'm just taking crazy pills, dude. Yeah. You know?
Well, once I saw them kind of nudge Tulsi out with some type of rules about something in order to get to the next debate, she explained it and I can't remember it. But they basically nudged her out with some rule change. And I knew once they nudged her out, I'm like, okay, they want their programmable dude in there who's just a puppet. He doesn't have to be very functional because there's a machine behind him that's really doing it. And she would challenge that machine as she did in Congress. Yeah. She challenged Hillary, Pelosi.
That's why. So she got, I don't remember where I heard this. It might have been on Rogan. But they said... Or she said that she would do morning workouts with Crenshaw, right?
Well, but they hated that,
They'd go to the gym together in the morning. And she got like pulled into the office and was like, hey.
What are you doing?
we see that you've been like, you know, hanging out with blah, 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 blah. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
isn't that a good thing? Yeah.
We may hold different political beliefs, but like, we're all on the same team. I can't go for a run with you. Like,
isn't that crazy? Well, it shows you how tribal it is. Yeah.
Yeah. It was Hillary that fucking put the final nail in her coffin. She said,
pissed off Hillary. Yeah.
She pissed off Hillary and that fucking crazy winch. Like, God, dude. Look at the body count. That's all I know.
That's why Tulsi's always on deployment. And she's safe halfway around the world. Surrounded by SF dudes in Africa.
Bro, you want to, I mean, to tell you the truth, I mean, we're joking and laughing right now, but there's some men out there. Like, do you know Andy Frisella by chance? He started First Form, that supplement company.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he's rad. He is like fucking us times 10. Like, nice. His show is like very often number one on iTunes. Like, he's a very heavy hitter, but he is extremely vocal against all this stuff. Nice. Rogan, again, like Rogan's not even super vocal against it. Rogan is just willing to let people share their perspectives.
He's just a super good listener. Yeah.
Even that you can't have anymore. And it's like, man, some of these men that are changing the trajectory of our country with their voices, like, the system hates them.
Oh yeah.
And it fucking worrisome, dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're dangerous. Well, that's why I love pirate radio, because they haven't quite figured out how to cripple us like they do through social media, wiping out accounts, shadow banning. They haven't quite figured this platform out. Yeah. But they will, I'm sure. I mean, because it's dangerous. No,
they will.
What people are doing, you know?
I mean, fucking the whole Spotify thing, they were trying to come after him, but
I don't know.
He's your moneymaker.
Yeah, he's your Michael Jordan, bro. What are you gonna do?
So they're torn between fucking greed and following the fucking corrupt machine. What do we do?
Yeah, it's a tough spot. Yeah, so I hope he holds strong, man. Because I love his show, man. He's just a good listener. He doesn't push a narrative. He allows people to come on, and he's an amazing listener. And I mean, of course, he can navigate questions very well, but just the skill set of listening, which I suck at because I'm a jabber jaw, but I respect how he does his format's amazing, man.
So, Greg, to wrap up, and to give a summation, I have a question for you. So if a young man or woman were to come up to you now and say, "Hey, I really want to go into law enforcement," what would your advice be now?
Well, I've had a lot of people come up to me in the last 6 months with that exact question. And I am telling people, like, if you feel a calling to serve your community as a law enforcement officer or as a soldier or a Marine or whatever it is, I'm not going to tell you not to do it, because I did that as a young man and I needed that and it helped form me. But I will also say with full transparency and honesty that the government that you are going to be serving is very different than the government that I served, and that I don't think that you're going to walk away from that experience with what you're hoping to get out of it in today's world. Hmm. I think that there's so much corruption. I think there's so much government control and overreach that, in my opinion, I think if you want to serve your government in any capacity, I'm telling people to sit out for 2 years. Like, I would not want my children going into the military today. I would not, you know, I have a lot of friends through my jiu-jitsu academy that are young men, 17, 18, that are considering like going into that path. And with all the bullshit and all the failed leadership policies, I just don't have, I can't say in good conscience, yeah, go do it, go serve, go get that experience. I think we need to put our focus on home for a little bit and take care of our own and see if we can turn the trajectory of this government around. But with all that said, I still understand we do need good police officers and we do need good military men and women. And if you have that calling, go into it with the understanding that you need to be the person that we talked about earlier. You need to be the person that is there, that is with integrity, that is willing to stand against the machine. And you need to understand that these callings are to serve your communities and not serve the government. And if you understand that going in, just know it'll probably be a hard road, and it will come with some bumps and bruises, because as soon as they realize you're not part of their agenda, you're going to be treated a little differently.
Yeah. Well,
but you can still go get that experience and you can still go do those things. Just know that it's not what it used to be, and you're being used in a very different capacity than police officer and military have been used previously.
Well said. I think that's great advice. For the Vibe Tribe out there who wants to learn more about you or your podcast or anything, Greg Anderson, what can they do?
So my biggest social media platform is Instagram, and it is GR Anderson 33. And it's not some crazy satanic number that I've been accused of. I was 33 years old. I was 33 years old when I opened my Instagram. And so I was like, okay.
33 is a bad number. If it was like G Anderson 666 or something.
Bro, I got accused of being this like British shill that's covering for the Illuminati and all this weird shit. And bro, it was actually a good lesson, because it's like, you see all this weird shit come across your feed, and a lot of times it's like, oh, this is interesting. You know, there's videos about how I'm like a satanic devil worshiper, and it's been proven because of the shirts that I wear that are symbolic to Satan and all this crazy shit.
Holy shit.
But that's neither here nor there. Greg, GR Anderson 33 is my Instagram. The podcast is The Endless Endeavor. And it's everywhere you can find podcasts, on Spotify, on Apple. We have a YouTube, but I'm constantly in and out of a banned status on YouTube for spreading misinformation.
Oh, gosh. So
throw that up on Rumble, man. Yeah, get a Rumble.
Yeah, no, yeah, we're doing Rumble too.
Good.
But yeah, and I just love this new phase of my life, because the biggest focus is my jiu-jitsu academy and growing people in my community locally. But then I take time to put out one episode a week. We release every Thursday, and just having open discussions with people like we're doing today has been very powerful.
Yeah.
And I always say this, if this discussion that the three of us just sat down for the last hour and 44 minutes positively impacts one or two or 10 people, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing, well said. Right?
That's good vibes.
And I, like you, get enough emails that's like, man, I listened to episode whatever, it made me think, and dude, it helped me with my marriage, or I sat down with my boss, and it's
isn't like, that amazing? We love that stuff, that feedback.
Yeah, words have power. Mm. And so if you're a person out there that feels like you have something to say and you want to share it with your community, make sure that you put in the effort to do it, because words have power. And they cause actions, and they have real effect on our communities. And like you said, this is what we're doing with our life right now. This is how we stay in the fight. And the more of us that are willing to do that, lets everybody know as a collective, like, man, this is how we feel as a nation. This is how we feel as a community. And so voice your opinions, share your thoughts, and don't be one of those people that just feels one way but hides in the shadows because you might ruffle feathers. Like, this is a time for us to show our courage and show who we are. And I think that that is what is going to end up changing the trajectory. So hopefully sooner than later, you know?
Well said.
That's amazing, man. Greg, it's been an honor, man. I love you, brother. I love what you stand for. And I'm definitely going to check out your podcast. I got a lot of drive time at work, so I'm always looking for stuff. Cool, so man. I appreciate it, man. Thank you for your time. And your message is amazing, dude. Keep doing what you're doing, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for taking the time. Yeah.
And where are you guys located geographically?
I'm out of Sacramento area. He's in Texas.
Okay. Okay. I was going to say, like, I try and always do my podcast in person. Mm. I love the energy of sharing the room with people.
Oh, yeah.
And so I do different road trips and stuff pretty often for some of the projects that I do.
Oh, shit.
And dude, I would love to have you guys on. If it ever works out, we could do an episode of my podcast too. That'd be fun.
That would be super cool. Anytime, brother. And anytime you're in the area, man, hit me up. I'd love to roll with you, hang out, grab dinner. You're ever in Northern California, let me know. You're not that far away. Right. So,
yeah,
dude, I'll take you up on that for
sure. In Texas, nice. I'm always good for some barbecue and beer. So,
what part of Texas, dude? Because Texas is like its own continent.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to say it. I have to whisper this, but I'm in the San Francisco part, Austin.
Okay. San Francisco, Texas.
Bro, I went to, and I know we're trying to wrap this up, but I just got to tell you real quick. I went to Houston like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and there was more people sleeping in tents on the sidewalk than in Seattle. I was shocked. I was like, I thought Texas had their shit together, man.
The cities are the cities, man.
That was kind of a cesspool, man.
Liberal cities have gone. We could go on and on. You know what? It's at least a 6-beer conversation when you come to something.
Got it. All right. We'll have it then, man.
Absolutely. Well, Vibe Tribe, take Greg's words of wisdom. This was some really great insight and perspective. And again, you know, when it comes down to integrity, just go with your gut. I think that was the simplest advice I've heard, and it was so brilliant. You know what's right. You know what's wrong. Have a great week, Vibe Tribe. Greg, thank you for joining us. Clark, love you, brother.
Thanks again for having me.
Take care, guys.
Later, guys. Bye.